Chapter 9. The Defeat of Miriam. The Easter holiday began happily. Paul rode his bicycle up to Willey Farm. But he was in a hard, critical mood when he went out walking round the farm with Miriam. Paul kept on finding fault with her. They stopped to rest on a bed of dry grass.
"Why are you sad?"
she asked gently.
"I'm not sad.
Why should I be?" he answered. "I'm only normal." She wondered why he always called himself normal when he was unpleasant.
"But what's the matter?"
she insisted.
"Nothing."
He picked up a stick and dug the earth with it in a fever of bad temper. Gently but firmly, she put her hand on his.
"Don't," she said. "Put it away."
He threw the stick into the grass and leaned back.
"What is it?"
she asked again softly. He lay quite still with only his eyes alive, and those full of unhappiness.
"You know,"
he said finally, his voice rather tired.
"You know, we'd better break off."
"Why?"
she asked.
"What has happened?"
"Nothing has happened.
I can only give friendship. I'm not capable of anything more. It's not equal, our relationship. Let's end it." He meant that she loved him more than he loved her. She pitied him in his suffering. He felt so ashamed.
"But I don't understand,"
she said.
"I know,"
he cried.
"You never will. You'll never believe I can't. Can't physically, any more than I can fly."
"Can't what?"
she whispered.
"Love you."
"What have they been saying at home?"
she asked.
"It's not that,"
he answered. But she knew it was. They did not talk much more that evening. Instead, Paul and Edgar went off on their bicycles. He had come back to his mother. Hers was the strongest tie in his life. Even Miriam seemed unreal when he thought about her. And in the same way his mother depended on him, Paul was going to change the face of the earth in some way that really mattered. And yet, for Paul, it was not enough. His new young life, so strong and commanding, was driving him on towards something else. It made him mad with restlessness. Miriam had not stopped hoping to win Paul back. He still visited the Leavers, but spent most of his time with Edgar. In May, she asked Paul to come to the farm and meet Mrs. Dawes. He was rather excited at the idea of seeing Clara again. Mrs. Dawes came for the day. Her heavy, fair hair was twisted on top of her head. She wore a white blouse and a dark blue skirt. Paul did not come till the afternoon. As he got off his bicycle, Miriam saw him look round eagerly at the house. "Hasn't Clara come yet?" he asked.
"Yes,"
replied Miriam in her musical voice.
"She came this morning. She's reading."
"And is she any pleasanter?" he asked again.
"You know, I always think she's quite pleasant."
Clara sat inside reading. Paul saw the back of her white neck with the fine hair lifted up from it. She rose, looking at him without interest. When she shook hands, she seemed to keep him at a distance and yet offer him something. He noticed the roundness of her breasts inside her blouse and the fine curve of her shoulders.
"You've chosen a fine day," he said.
"It seems so,"
she answered. The conversation continued for a little. Clara did not seem to find Paul's comments at all clever.
"Well, I think I'll go and see Edgar,"
he said, and left them. After tea, Mrs. Leavers said to Clara,
"And you find life happier now?"
"Much happier."
"And are you satisfied?"
"If I can remain free and independent, yes."
"And you don't miss anything in your life?"
asked Mrs. Leavers gently. "I've put all that behind me." Paul had been listening to this conversation. "You'll find you're always falling over the things you've put behind you," he said, and left to find Edgar again. He felt he had been clever and was proud of himself. He whistled as he went. A little later, Miriam came to ask if he would go with her and Clara for a walk. Clara walked in front by herself a part of the way, her head bent. Paul was curious about her. He forgot Miriam, who was walking beside him, talking to him. She looked at him, finding he did not answer her. His eyes were fixed in front on Clara.
"Do you still think she is unpleasant?"
she asked. "Something's the matter with her," he said.
"Yes,"
said Miriam. They came to a field hidden by trees round the edges. In the smooth grass, beautiful, bright yellow spring flowers were growing. Paul and Miriam started picking them. Clara wandered about, looking depressed. Then she knelt down, bending forward to smell the flowers. Her neck looked such a beautiful thing. Her breasts swung slightly in her blouse. The curve of her back was beautiful and strong. Suddenly, without realizing, Paul was dropping a handful of flowers over her hair and neck. She looked up at him with fear in her gray eyes, wondering what he was doing. Suddenly, standing there above her, he felt uncomfortable. Clara laughed strangely and rose, picking the flowers from her hair. One flower remained caught in her hair. Paul saw, but did not tell her. He collected the flowers he had dropped. Unexpectedly, she gave him a grateful smile. Going down the path, they were all silent. As the evening deepened, they could see the mining village across the valley. Little lights on a dark hill touching the sky. "It's been nice, hasn't it?" said Paul. Miriam agreed. Clara was silent. He could tell by the way she moved, pretending not to care, that she suffered. At home, he told his mother about Clara, that she was poor, that she lived with her mother, that she was 30 years old.
"And what's so charming about her, my boy?" asked his mother.
"I don't know that she's charming, mother, but she's nice. She seems straight, you know, not a bit deep." Mrs. Morell was not against the idea of Clara. Annie and Leonard were getting married. She had saved £11 and Leonard 23, so the wedding took place almost immediately. Arthur came home and looked sensational in his army uniform. Annie looked nice in a grey dress she could also use for Sundays. Morell was cool to Leonard. Annie cried her eyes out in the kitchen on leaving her mother. Mrs. Morell cried a little, then stroked her and said,
"Don't cry, child. He'll be good to you."
Afterwards, Paul and Mrs. Morell were left alone. "You're not sorry she's married, Mother, are you?"
"No. But it seems strange how she's gone from me. When I think of my own wedding day, I can only hope that her life will be different.
I'll never marry while I've got you. I won't." He kissed her and went to bed. Mrs. Morell sat thinking about her daughter, about Paul, about Arthur. She was upset at losing Annie. But Paul needed her. And Arthur needed her too. Paul felt life changing around him. Annie was married. Arthur was living his own life of pleasure. For both of them, life lay outside their mother's house. They only came home for holidays and rest. Paul dreamed of following them. Yet home for him was beside his mother. He grew more and more restless. Miriam did not satisfy him. His old wish to be with her grew weaker. Sometimes he met Clara in Nottingham. Sometimes he saw her at Willey Farm. But between Paul and Clara and Miriam, there was always a kind of struggle. For Miriam's 21st birthday, Paul wrote her a long, rather philosophical letter, which more or less brought their relationship to an end. He was now 23 years old, and his sexual need was growing strong. Often, when he talked to Clara Dawes, he was conscious of his blood flowing quicker, of something alive in him, of a new self, a new consciousness. He knew that sooner or later, his need would have to be satisfied.